this, if I might. Where is God? If I'm going to want to love God, and all we can do is want to, because if we want to, we are, with all my heart, all my decisions, all my thinking, all my soul, all my yearning, all my strength, energy, application, what I choose to do or not do, and all my mind, daring the truth in all areas, if that's what I want to do, and I do, and if that's what you want to do, and you do, well, where do we find God? And I can't resist sharing this poetry with you. St. Augustine, who's always worth a read, in his Confessions says this. He asked this question, and he said, look, I ask the earth, and I ask the sea. And they replied, we're not your God. Look beyond us. And you could add, I asked my husband, I asked my wife, I asked my children, I asked my mother, father. Whoever we ask, and however close they are to us, they'll have to say, we are not your God. Look beyond us. I asked the sky, says Augustine, I asked the sun and the moon and the stars, and they said, neither are we the God whom you seek. I said to all these things, you've told me that you're not my God. Tell me something about him. And with a loud voice, they cried out, he made us. My questioning was my looking upon them. Their reply was their beauty. If you want to know where God is, please look at the most beautiful people in your life and the most beautiful places in your life. Just look at them. Anything that attracts your longing, and Augustine says, okay, if you're attracted to that little son of yours or that child or that man or woman, whoever, if this person attracts you, all you've got to do then is say, hey, God made this person. God made this place. God is making, rather, this person and this place. That'll give you the image of God you'll need. The images that we picked up at school, Father, Judge, Lord, they may or may not work for you. That'll give you the image of God you'll need. The images that we picked up at school, Father, Judge, Lord, they may or may not work for you. If they don't work, scrap them for God's sake. Any image of love is an image of God, and only images of love are images of God. So you can use male images, female images. If you want to call God a child, go for it. Because they're all reflections of who God is. A poem which somehow or other I remembered yesterday as I was preparing this, whatever it is I'm doing, and I remembered the first line. I don't know where I remembered it from, and I've got an old book of poetry in my room, but it was there, so I thought, thank God, well, I'll give it to you. You ready? I don't know if I know if I like it all that much, but it's pretty good. It's by an Irish poet who died, by the look of it, in the Irish uprising, in 1916. It says, I see... Sorry, just because the most beautiful place to look of all the people you love will be Jesus. So he says, I see his blood upon the rose, and in the stars, start again. I see his blood upon the rose, and in the stars the glory of his eyes. His body gleams amid eternal snows. His tears fall from the skies. I see his face in every flower. The thunder and the singing of the birds are but his voice. And carven by his power, rocks are his written words. All pathways by his feet are worn. His strong heart stirs the ever-beating sea. His crown of thorns is twined with every thorn, his cross in every tree. And better than all that, I believe, again, John of the Cross. Stunning statement. If this is all you took away from today into prayer, I think you'd be doing well. He says, to you, each of you, so take this personally for heaven's sake. You ready? This is spoken direct to you. O most beautiful of creatures. Do you mind that being said of each of you? No one's embarrassed? Good. Because you should hear that said of you. I don't care where you've been, I don't care what you've done, I don't care what you're going to do. This is true of you in God's eyes. And so it has implications for our behaviour and our repentance and our change. But this is the truth. O most beautiful of creatures, transcendent spirit, who long to know where your beloved is and where you may find him so as to be united with him, he dwells within you. You are yourself the tabernacle, his secret hiding place. Rejoice, exult, for all you could possibly desire, all your heart's longing is so close, so intimate as to be within you. You cannot be without him. And maybe that's the thing we all need to know most. And we can know it, can't we? And then lose it. Lose it because of behavior or lose it because of anything. We can have it and then, but to keep believing that the God that you are to love with all your heart and all your soul is not dependent on anybody else around you or the world. We've already seen how beautiful all they can be or may be. But ultimately, I think, and most profoundly, that's where we find this God. Now just a few quotations from the saints. I guess the ones I like, so I share them with you. St. Bernard, I think this is really important, you know, because, well, I'll read it in case you get disappointed, as I sometimes do. The body with all its needs will still weigh us down. So you might have an ecstasy here in the church later, but then you won't float out of the church, you'll just crawl out. You'll go out with the same heavy person that you are, back into the same world that you belong to, with the same husband, children, wife, uncles, aunties, problems, whatever. They'll all be still there. The body with all its needs will still weigh us down. The weakness of corrupt nature will remain not yet mastered. So cheer up. Bitter pain will still rock our calm, but we will not be overcome in these sufferings because we are held in love. We've talked about God's love. We're now talking this morning about our response in love. And God is holding us, but by responding, we are being held. And that's the key point of our response. We are held in love. Do you keep watch? He keeps watch also. If you rise at night before the time of vigil and hasten to anticipate the morning watch, you will find him there. He will always be waiting for you. You'd be very rash if you claimed to love him first or love him more. His love is greater, and it preceded yours. Because the soul knows this, is it any wonder that she, his bride, boasts that God cares for her alone, as though he had no others to care for? And she sets aside all her cares and devotes herself to him alone with all her heart. The final words of Julian of Norwich in her book, sometimes called Showings or Revelations of Divine Love. She received at the age of 30 some extraordinary visions and, well, spiritual experiences. She pondered them for 20 years. Then she tried to write about them. And finally, this is her statement to sum up all her religious experience. She said that she'd been searching for the meaning, and then she said she came to see that love was the meaning. Who showed it to you? Love. That's God. What was shown to you? Love. Why was it shown to you? For love. Keep yourself in that love, and you will learn more of it. You'll never learn anything else, ever. So what we're talking about this morning is the only thing worth talking about in the final analysis. The cloud of unknowing that anonymous medieval writing, pretty well at the same time as Julian of Norwich, perhaps a fraction before, I think, has this to say, I tell you this, one loving, blind desire for God alone is more valuable in itself, more pleasing to God and to the saints, more beneficial to your own growth and more helpful to your friends, both living and dead, than anything else you could do. Now that teaching that love, meaning loving God with all your heart, soul, mind, is the most beneficial thing we can do for ourselves or anybody else, it comes right through the saints. Here's John of the Cross, stanza 28 says, now I occupy my soul and all my energy. And I'm told by the Spanish scholars that that word he uses there, we translate energy, and that's good, but it's caudal. And if any of you speak Spanish, I'm sure you agree because the experts told me, a caudal is a river in spate. It's a rushing torrent, you know, after the snows of winter have melted. So it's a river at full power. So now I occupy my soul and all my energy. Or my strength is a biblical term, in his service. I no longer tend the herd, nor have I any other work, now that my every act is love. And in his commentary on that, he says, among other things, when the soul reaches the state of union of love, a little of this pure love is more precious to God and to the soul and more beneficial to the church, even though it seems that one is doing nothing, than all other works put together. If you're concerned about your family, a moment of silent prayer, of love of God, is doing more for your family than 24 hours of hard work without that love. Is the point clear? And we've got to believe it. It's so important, and it's so hard to believe. Because we tend, I tend, so I suppose you do, there's a need. We might be moved with compassion to do something about it, or just feeling or want to do it, or feel we should, all those things. Then what do? We do it. We do something for a number of reasons. One, there's a need there calling on us to respond. Two, it's very, very hard to do nothing, isn't it? When there's a need. Either because we wonder whether, partly, there's a whole lot of motives, we wonder whether people think we don't care, is one problem. Second, it's terribly hard to do nothing. You feel all, ah! So to avoid that terrible feeling of doing nothing, we'll do something. Just to keep moving. Could be to keep being distracted. Don't know. So as I've suggested at the end of those notes for you, one practical lesson that might come out of today, or mightn't, practical lesson for me, you can make your own, is that pause between need and feeling and action, that space to go to the, where we're going here today, to go to the center and look towards God in trust and make an act of will. I want to do your will. What do you want me to do for this person, for this situation? No answer may come, and I don't mean you'll hear it, but I mean there may be no movement, and you might have to live with the ache of doing absolutely nothing but wait. And in that waiting period, others may think you don't care, or you may think they think you don't care, and all those complications that go on in our psyche. And maybe there is nothing you can do. And maybe for you to do something or for me to do something would intrude. But if we wait, and if the answer comes, and I'll only use simple words like that, if the movement of the heart in tune with God leads in a particular direction, that direction of action will have all the creative energy of God, all the power of healing, all the beauty. And wouldn't it be tragic if we spent our life not making that space to love God with all our heart, soul, mind and strength, and that becomes the source of energy. Conclude by sharing with you again some of the concluding words of this book that I recommended earlier by Gerald May of The Awakened Heart. And he makes these points. If we give ourselves more space between feeling and response, and enter that space in a consecrated way, relying on our commitment to God, we will find ourselves empowered for whatever response love calls for. I'm sure of it, he says. The power then is not just ours. It's the nuclear fusion of divine grace and our dignified willingness. Authentic, loving responsiveness invites us to turn our consciousness towards the exact point where our hearts are already looking, to the source of love. There, and only there, is the wellspring of authentic responsiveness found. And his concluding advice, because we've got to be practical and real in this world, he says, look, find your heart as best you can. That's all we can do. You never know whether you're there or not half the time, but find it as best you can. Two, follow it towards the source of love as much as possible. Consecrate yourself. make an act of will. I want to do your will, O God. And then trust. Pretty practical. Pretty good. God's grace is present. God's love is irrevocable. You can trust it and trust yourself within it. There are no exceptions. There are no places inside you or in the whole of creation where God's love does not exist. It's alive in prisons, in hospital wards, in earthquakes and hurricanes, in your own selfishness and addictions. It's always crying out to your heart, and your heart is awake, responding. Seek it and trust it. Augustine, you have made us for yourself, and our heart is longing, trust till it rests in you, restless. So we've got everything going for us. We've got God's constant love, which will, and there's nothing you can do to stop God loving you. Don't go out and experiment, but it's true. Nothing we can do ever, nothing anybody can do can stop God loving you, because God's love. So that's the first point to make. God doesn't stop loving when we stop. So that's good to know. If you knock on the door, it'll always be open. In fact, it's always open. You don't even have to knock. So that's one factor. The second factor is our heart is made for God. So is everybody's heart made for God. So the heart, at its deepest longing, is longing for God. Whether we like it or not, whatever people say, however atheistic or anything else we try and drum up, the fact is our heart is made for God and longs for him, whether we want it to or don't want it to. It is. So that's all in favour of everything we're doing. So he's just saying, go to it. But take time to do it. Trust it. Want it. Tell God we want to do his will. We want to love him with all our heart. Not fudging. All our will, all our strength, all our mind, all our longing. And if we want it, we do want it. If we say we want it and look for that longing right in there, trust it and follow it, we will be doing God's will, and our loving will not be coming from my own need to love or my own not wanting a reputation of being not loving or whatever other things you get to. I've given you my two sins, what are yours? So all the different things that can buzz around in our heads that complicate our life, that won't be happening. We'll be doing humble